Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Soita Daf Lamed. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Dafar for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief four-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin five lines from the top of Daf Lamed. On the side of the Gemara, you will notice that we have a Nosei/Mivne heading, and we also indicate that it's Ad Omid Beis. In other words, this discussion continues, covering all of this Omid and spilling onto the next Omid as well. We feature here Hey, or Chamisha Tanoim, five Tanaic opinions. De'ein Sheni Oisa Shlishi Bechulin, that when something reaches a Sheni level of Tuma, if it's Chulin, it will not create a third level in Chulin. In other words, a Sheni can affect a piece of Truma, a piece of Kodshim, of sacrificial meat, but a Sheni will not affect another piece of Chulin. Just by way of general disclaimer, as far as today's Shi'ur is concerned, it is predicated on a well-founded knowledge of our previous shiur, Daf Chof Tes. So if you're a first-time listener, by all means, listen to our previous shiur in order to have a foundation for what we're going to say today. For those who heard our previous shiur and understood it, we're not going to repeat the basic points that we covered in our previous shiur, but we're going to work with the assumption that you're familiar with them, so that if things appear to be a little unclear because of, we'll say, lack of explanation, understand that we're basing ourselves on our previous shiur. So now we turn to the Gemara. Omar Rav Asi, Omar Rav, V'Amri Lo, another version of names, Omar Rabo Ben Isi, Omar Rav. And now here is a list of five Tanoim: Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Eliezer. Kulhu, Sviraluhu, they all are of the opinion, the Ein Sheni Oisa Shlishi Bechulin, that something that is Tomei to the tune of a Sheni level of Tuma, when it comes into contact with another piece of Chulin, the other piece of Chulin will not be affected. The diamonds, as you understood from our introductory remarks, highlight each one of these names. So if you just skim ahead, you can see immediately of Rabbi Meir, a few lines later Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Lozer, and then at the bottom of the, close to the bottom of the Omid, Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Meir Disnan. What did Rabbi Meir say that reveals to us that Ein Sheni Oisa Shlishi? The following Tanaic source says, Kol haton biasmayim midivrei soifrim, all those that require immersion in a mikveh on a rabbinic level, midivrei soifrim means a rabbinic stringency is imposed on whatever case the source has in mind, the stringency being that they have to be immersed. Otherwise, there's a rabbinic level tumah. Rashi cites some of the examples. It's not important for us right now to get into the examples, but just realize that these items or these situations that require immersion, midivrei sofrim, they have an assumed sheni level of tuma. And you can see that in Rashi, basically across from here, we've dashed underlined that point in the Rashi. Kulam b'turas shniyim hit inum. They were laden with the status of a Sheni level Tumah. So now, those things, those situations, The most common of these situations are unwashed hands. Everyone is familiar, I'm sure, with the need for washing one's hands before eating bread. The washing of hands removes tumas yodayim. Otherwise, the hands are considered a shamey level of tuma. So, those things that are rabbinic, rabbinically need immersion or need purification, metame es hakodesh, upoisel es hatruma, umuter bechulin, uvemeiser, divrei Rebbe Meir. The main point right now is muter bechulin. We described the ton biasmayim are those things that require immersion or purification through water. They have a shamey level tuma. Notice that if one of those examples comes into contact with chulin, muter b'chulin, the chulin remains unaffected, indicating, as far as we said before, that there is no third level tuma. Shamey doesn't create a shlishi in chulin, nor in meiser, according to Rabbi Meir. V'chachomim osrim b'meiser. There's a technical machlokus in this source between Rabbi Meir and the chachomim regarding do these things affect meiser? Meiser referred to as meiser sheni, the tithe that is taken off of one's produce once every seven years of the Shemitah cycle, first and second, fourth and fifth years. That produce is to be eaten in Yerushalayim. It has a certain level of sanctity. Do these things that require bias mayim, divrei sofrim, ruin or metame meiser? So that's a machlokas. Let's just go over some other points in the source we didn't explain yet. We said that these things that require bias mayim, divrei sofrim, metame es hakodesh. That means that we used the example before of the hands. The hands will, if they touch sacrificial meat and have not been purified in water, so they will make the sacrificial meat tomei, and that sacrificial meat in turn can metame something else. So that if the hands are a sheni, the sacrificial meat would become a shlishi, and that sacrificial meat could then metame another piece of sacrificial meat, making it a revi'i. Posel satruma means that the ton bias mayim divrei sofrim, again we can use the hands example. If a person with his unpurified hands, unimmersed hands, touches truma, he ruins the truma, but that truma won't affect something else. It's the tuma stops there. Let's go on in the Gemara. Rabbi Yossi Ha Damoran. Rabbi Yossi was the focus of our discussion in our previous year, hence the Gemara says, as far as Rabbi Yossi is concerned, it's in accordance with what we have said already. And here the Gemara says a little bit more, De'im Isay, if it were so that Rabbi Yossi holds that there is a shlishi b'chulin, if you recall from our previous shiur on Daf Chof Tes, Rabbi Yossi had addressed the issue, from where do you know that there is a revi b'kodesh? And he presented us with a kal v'chomer, starting with Mechusar Kippurim, and derived the idea of a revi b'kodesh. Now, if it were so that Rabbi Yossi acknowledges there is such a thing as shlishi b'chulin, well then, laisi l'ravii b'truma v'chamishi b'kodesh. He could have extended the chain of tuma transmission even further than he did. He could have demonstrated that, well, if there's a shlishi b'chulin, that means that you could create a ravii b'truma and even a chamishi, a fifth level b'kodesh. But when you look back at Rabbi Yossi, you see him describing Kodesh as reaching only a fourth level. That's predicated on the idea then that Rabbi Yossi says that the Chulin itself can reach only a shamey level of Tumah and not any more. Rabbi Yoshua Desnan, Rabbi Lozer Omer, we have here two Tanaic opinions, but we want to focus in on Rabbi Yeshua, who's the second opinion in this source. And we're going to learn more laws of rabbinic defilement. In this source, we deal with a person that eats a certain quantity of food that had become tamei. How does that food affect the person that's eating it? On a Torah level, tamei food would not affect a person, would not metame an individual. But these are rabbinic laws. Let's continue. Rabbi Elazar Omer, ha'oichel oichel rishon, rishon. A person who eats, oichel rishon means food. There's a verb and a noun over here. So you have ha'ochel is the verb, maybe it's called an adverb, the action of eating. It's one who is eating. Ochel rishon, first level food. Rishon means the person himself becomes a Rishon level of Tumah. Sheni, if you eat food that's a Sheni, you become a Sheni, Shlishi. And if you eat a third level Tumah food, you become a Shlishi. I always try to remember Rabbi Elazar by the saying, you are what you eat. So if you ate a Shlishi level food, you become a Shlishi level of Tumah. Rabbi Yeshua Oymer, ha'echel oichel rishon, ve'oichel sheni, sheni. According to Rabbi Yeshua, we wouldn't be able to say you are what you eat, because you see, if you're eating food that's rishon, or food that's sheni, you become a sheni. So that even though the food might be first level tumah, you drop down to a sheni. We're not going to get into the reasons behind Rabbi Yeshua, why he says what he does. That is discussed elsewhere. You can see that in Maseches Chulin, a more elaborate discussion. But for our purposes, we continue in the source. If you eat shlishi, now we have to point out ahead of time that this is a reference to you're eating chulin. Up till now, we described you're eating chulin, that's a first level tumah, or chulin, that's a second level tumah. And here we continue with reference to chulin, that's a third level tumah. Now, that's very surprising, because we just said before that Rabbi Yeshua is one of those that holds that a sheni doesn't make a shlishi b'chulin. We'll explain that later. But for the time being, you're eating a chulin, that's a third level Tumah, what happens to the person? Sheni b'kodesh, v'ein sheni b'truma. It's a very unusual halacha, but it means you, as the eater, shoot up to becoming a sheni, but only with regard to kodesh, with regard to sacrifices. That means, practically speaking, if you ate third level chulin food, then as a sheni b'kodesh, that means if you touch another piece of, let's say, of some sacrificial meat, that sacrificial meat will now become a shlishi, and it in turn can ruin another piece of sacrificial meat, making it a revi'i level of tuma. However, by eating shlishi of chulin, you don't become a sheni with regard to truma. Basically, you wouldn't affect truma. And here is the significant point. This whole idea of shlishi making you into a sheni b'kodesh, and we described you were eating chulin that was a shlishi level of tuma. That is b'chulin shenasu altaras truma. It's a very specific situation. This is a person that, in all likelihood, he's a kohen. He wants to develop a lifestyle of, protection or routine of purity. So, what does he do? He accepts upon himself a type of vow that he treats his chulin as if it were truma, so that he would be very protective of his chulin, not allowing it to become tomei in the same way that he would be very protective of truma, which is very sensitive to becoming tomei. It's forbidden to eat truma tomei, for example. this source, Rabbi Yeshua, and this source is referring to a person, it's a unique case, where he treats his chulin as if it is truma. So if you treat your chulin as if it's truma, and that means that, well, you're, just like truma can reach a shlishi level of tuma, your chulin can also reach a shlishi level of tuma. But it's only because you're treating it as if, or you're treating your chulin with the same standards that you treat truma. What about standard chulin that's owned by non-kehanim who don't live such a protective and cautious existence? Ah, well, that kind of chulin would never become a shlishi. And that's what the Gemara points out. Altara satruma in, and using the Girsa of Rashi, we read, chulin gradi lo. In order to discuss a third level of chulin, it's only in the context of one who treats his chulin with the same purity levels as one would treat truma. But chulin gradi means standard chulin. No, there is no third level. Alma kosovar. This shows you that Rabbi Yeshua holds ein sheni oisa shlishi b'chulin. That chulin that has reached a sheni level of tuma, if it touches another piece of chulin, the other piece of chulin will remain unaffected. It doesn't become a third level. Rabbi Elazar Desanya. Rabbi Elazar also holds what ein sheni oisa shlishi b'chulin. As it says, Rabbi Elazar Oimer shloshtan shovim. The three are all the same. What do we mean by that? Harishon, a first level tuma, shebekodesh v'shebechulin v'shebetruma. That means if you have sacrificial meat or chulin food or truma tithes, that became a rishon l'tuma. What effects does it have? What can it do by way of tuma transmission? Mitameh shnayim upoisel echad b'kodesh. That means that, let's use a, as your starting point, some chulin that's a rishon level tuma. It will impart tuma two levels down. That means it will make a sheni, and the sheni will make a shlishi, and that shlishi has the power to go one more step, but it will stop there at that fourth level. That's upoisel echad b'kodesh. That's that. That's called revi b'kodesh. And hence the word posel is used, because the defilement stops at that point. What else can we say about a rishon of either kodesh, chulin, or truma? What else can we say in the realm of truma? Mitame echad upoisel echad b'truma. That means that if the rishon of any of those items that we mentioned, chulin, kodesh, or truma, touches a piece of truma, so the truma will become a sheni, and it can pasel, it'll transmit tuma one more step, but it will stop there, if you're talking about truma. And here's the main point. Upoisel echad b'chulin. There is no further steps. Namely, if you have some rishon food matter that's kodesh, chulin, or truma, and it touches chulin, what happens? The chulin, it becomes a sheni, but that's it. It doesn't affect any further, any more. It won't be able to affect another piece of chulin. What do we see? Ein sheni oisa shlishi b'chulin. Rabbi Eliezer Desnan. Where do we see Rabbi Lezer holding Ein Sheni Oisa Shlishi? This fifth source, the fifth Tana, Rabbi Lezer, deals with the topic of Hafroshes Chala. This is a tithe removed from dough given to Kohanim, and Chala has the same status as Truma. The source will discuss the need of removing the challah tithe for dough that has become defiled. If you're going to remove or tithe the defiled dough itself, then the challah that you're removing from it itself will be tameh, and the kohen will lose out insofar as he will have to burn it. It's like truma tameh, it's something you burn, you cannot eat it. What's the solution, therefore, if you have some dough that's become defiled? The idea is, take another piece of dough that is tohor, that has not become defiled yet, and you haven't tithed it yet. So you have, we'll say you have a bowl of tohor, untithed dough. You remove the required amount that's needed for the challah tithe, and it's, you'll be taking off enough. We don't have to get into the details, 1/24th or 1/48th. These are details, but there's a certain amount, certain percentage that's required to take off of dough. You take off the necessary amount that will cover the, in addition to the tohor dough, it'll cover the tomei dough. Our focus in this discussion is you're going to be taking off enough tohor dough that you eventually will declare as a challah tithe to exempt the tomei dough. The problem over here is that in tithing, the tithe has to be next to, or maybe even more accurately, has to be in contact with the item being tithed. But it would be quite self-defeating over here if you're going to take the challah from tohor dough and attach it to the tomei dough. You'll end up ruining that piece that you're going to be declaring as challah. So in this source, we'll discover a method. And the name or the halacha is referred to here, this idea of being connected, is Torei Mina Mukof. Mukof means next to or attached to. And once again, the challah tithe that I'm removing from the tohor dough is going to exempt the tomei batter, the tomei dough. And we have to work out a way that the challah tithe is in contact with the tomei dough. So here, if you will forgive the pun, you want to have your cake and eat it too. And let's see how we accomplish that. Namely, that you'll be able to tithe a challah tithe that will remain tor, and at the same time fulfill the requirement of being min hamukof. Disnan. Rebbe Elazar Omer, challah niteles min haTorah al haTameya. The challah tithe can be removed from, or separated from tohor dough, in order to exempt some tomei dough that you have. Ketzad, how do we describe this? Shtei isos achas tor vachas tameya. He has two batters, two doughs. One is tohor and one is defiled. Noitel kidei challah. He should take, kidei challah means a sufficient amount of dough to constitute a challah tithe, and you take that from a batter, from isa, from dough, that hasn't been tithed yet. Otherwise, you would be taking from something that's poter alachiyuv, which is not acceptable. So, and what do you then do? V'nosein, note we have here Roman numeral number one. There's going to be a second version later. This is a Mishnah later, we're going to be quoting from a Brisa, a different type of Tanaic source. Here it says, V'nosein pachos mikabetza be'emtza kidei lito min amukof. So you set up a type of row over here. You've got your tomei dough, and then pachos mikabetza means an amount of tohor dough that is less than an egg quantity, and you take that pochus mikabetza of tohor dough, put it next to the Tomei Do, and then next to this, Pachos Mikabetz of Tor Do, you put your Challah tithe. Kedei Litol Min HaMukaf. With this, we've established a sense of connection, of continuity, between the Tomei batter and the Challah dough, the dough that's going to be declared as Challah to exempt this Tomei batter. And the connection is made by taking a small amount of Tohar dough and putting it between the two. And in order, if you do that, so then you're being Noitel Min HaMukaf, where you're fulfilling the idea of having the tithe connected to that which is being tithed. We continue at the top of Amud Beis, V'chachomim Oisrim. The Chachomim do not accept that. V'tanya, there's a second version of what is the quantity of that middle dough that's going to connect the challah on the one side with the tomei batter on the other side. How much is in the middle? Kibetza. A full egg quantity of tohor dough. It's important to point out that these sources, 1 and 2, are both according to Rebbe Eliezer. The Chachamim do not accept that. As we go on in the Gemara, you notice triangles. On the side under the Mivneh heading, these are Hezberim, Amah Cholkim, Reb Lozer v'Chachamim. What are they arguing about? Reb Lozer Mati Losim Kibetza Chulin Torim Bamtza. Reb Lozer allows putting an egg quantity of Chulin, Tahorim, Tahor Chulin in the middle. V'Chachamim, Sha'osrim, and we have to find out what are they saying, what is the reason for them, they who prohibit. So structurally, we're going to present several options. It's through the first option that will eventually reveal that Rebbe Lozer holds Ein Sheni Oisa Shlishi B'chulin. Let's see, how do we get to that? So now we continue. Savrua. We're going to work with the following assumption. Idi V'idi B'isa Rishona. Both are the Braisa that speaks about a Kibetza in the middle, and the Mishnah that spoke about a Pachos Mikibetz in the middle. Both are addressing a case where the Tomei dough is a Rishon Latuma. V'chulin ha-tevulin l'chalo lo k'chalo domu. The word tevulin is based on the word tevel. Tevel is something untithed. The hunk of dough that you separated from the tohar bowl that you're going to consider the challah tithe, you haven't designated it, let's say verbally, as challah yet. You plan to. You're going to do that. You're going to say hareze challah. You're going to say, you're going to make a statement of dedication that this is challah. You will, a pronouncement, but you haven't done it yet. So what it is, that dough prior to your pronouncement is essentially chulin with the potential of challah in it. That's called chulin hatvulin l'challah. How do we look at it? Do we look at it, how do we identify it? Do we identify it as chulin, namely as it is now, or do we identify it in terms of its potential, namely it becoming challah? So we're working with the assumption, our second assumption here is, that chulin hatvulin l'challah lo k'challah damu, does not have challah status. Rather, it has chulin status. Don't forget, we said quite a bit earlier that challah, that real challah, that means truly dedicated, tithed challah, is the same as truma. And as we've seen so many times already, truma is more sensitive to tumah than chulin is. So what have we said so far? We have, first of all, the setup. We have a little illustration in the margin describing the setup. You've got the Isa, that's Tamea. You've got on the other side, on the right-hand side, you can see what you have. We call it Chala, but it's right now it hasn't been pronounced as Chala yet. And then you've got that thing in the middle, which is either it's a Kapochos Mikabetza or a Kabetza of Isa Tahora. The assumption right now is that the Isa that's Tamea is a Rishon Latuma. The little piece of dough in the middle is going to become Tame. It's going to become a Sheni. Does it transmit Tuma to the Chala, to that other piece that's going to be declared as Chala? Well, let's continue in the Gemara. My love, beha komifligi. Is it not so that the following is the point of controversy? The more sovar, Rabbi Eliezer, who allows putting, even according to the Brisa, according to the source number 2, allows putting a full egg quantity of dough in the middle. Ein sheni oisa shlishi b'chulin. Why does he allow that? Because even though, as a kibetza, not only does it absorb tuma, but it, technically speaking, if it were a rishon, for example, it would pass on tuma to something else. But what happens over here? It becomes a sheni because of its contact with the isa tamea, which is a rishon. The thing in the middle becomes a sheni, and the chala, which is, as we said, it's really chulin hatavulin l'chala, has chulin status. It remains unaffected. So that once I set it up like this, I can then pronounce that potential chala as being chala. Of course, when you make the pronouncement, let's say a second before the pronouncement, you'll take it away, you'll push it off to the side, not leaving it remaining in contact with that piece in the middle. But before you make the challah pronouncement regarding that piece that we've labeled as challah, before you make the pronouncement, it's essentially chulin. And what do we see from here? And this is the whole point of bringing this discussion in. That Rebbe Lezer, who allows you putting in even a kibetza quantity in the middle, it's because though it becomes a sheni, the tuma doesn't go any further. Ein sheni oisa shlishi b'chulin. Umor sovar, the Rabbanan who prohibit, well, they hold sheni oisa shlishi b'chulin. And if you put an egg quantity of tohar dough in contact with the Isa Tamea, that's a Rishon, so the Isa Tamea, that's a Rishon, is going to make that middle stuff sheni, and that middle thing is going to then ruin the Chala that you wanted to preserve as Tohar. You won't be able to. The Gemara, I should just point out, as far as what is the difference between having the Kibetza there versus having a Pochos Mikibetza, the idea of having pochos mikabetz, according to the Roman numeral number 1, the Mishnah source, it's not because the Mishnah holds that the sheni would make a shlishi, but rather, as Rashi says, the Mishnah reflects a philosophy that whatever you can do to minimize tuma, do so. That piece in the middle, we would like it to it's going to become tomei, but you're not supposed to metame chulin. The only reason we're allowing this over here is for the sake of accomplishing a proper hafroshas truma. So we're going to compromise the general objection to being metame chulin, but if you're already given metama chulin, try to metama as little as possible. Therefore, we're telling you to put there a pachos mikabetza. There's another explanation you can find in Rashi as well, but this is getting off into a bit of a detail, which for our purposes, we are here to show how Rabbi Lezer holds Ein Sheni Oysa Shlishi Bechulin. And we've accomplished that by saying the fact that Rabbi Lezer in Roman numeral 2 allows you to put a full beitza quantity of Tohor dough there, and it will not affect the next piece of dough, which is going to be declared as challah, shows us that Ein Sheni Oysa Shlishi Bechulin. The Gemara, though, rejects this analysis of the Machlokes. Omar Rav Mori Brei Rav Kana. The Kulei Alma, everyone, even the Rabbonin agree, not just Rabbi Lazar, but even the Rabbonin agree, Ein Sheni Oysa Shlishi Bechulin. Well, if that's the case, so why would the Rabbonin object to putting a kibetza quantity of Tohor dough in the middle? The challah is not going to get affected. Well, you'll see right now that according to the Rabbanan, it will. According to this version number 2, Rav Mori's version is that the definition of that hunk of dough that's going to be declared or pronounced as challah, what is its status right now? That is their controversy between Reb Lezer and the Chachamim. More sovar kechaladomu, the Rabbanan who prohibit setting up the doughs as we did above, the reason for that is because the challah that is as yet unpronounced, not dedicated as challah, but the fact that it's potentially challah, it's treated with a challah standard right now. Now, a challah standard is like a truma standard. And that middle piece, being in contact with the iso tamea, is going to become a sheni. And a sheni will affect challah. So the rabbanon don't allow that setup. Umor sovar, Rebbe Lezer holds, lo kechallah domu. That chulin hatvulin lechallah, chulin that has the latent challah in it, is not viewed as challah, it's viewed as chulin. And we have said already that ain sheni oysa shlishi bechulin. So there's no problem with this setup. The iboyesem, or third analysis, de kule almo, chulin hatvulin lechala loy kechala damu. That we're now saying that everyone holds that that's not the point of machlokis between Blazer and the Chachamim. And what else does everyone hold by? V'ein sheni oysa shlishi bechulin. Well, if that's the case, why would the Rabbanan object to having the kibetza of dough in the middle? V'hacha b'muter ligrom tumo l'chulin shever tisrael kamiflagi. Here the machlokis isn't focused on will the challah be affected. The machlokis is actually focused on that middle piece. More sovar, Rebbe Lezer, who says, go right ahead and set it up like that, like we illustrated above. Mutur ligrom tuma lechulin sheberetz Yisrael. There's nothing wrong with causing tuma to fall upon chulin. So I'm a tama, I'm defiling that middle piece. No problem. What am I in effect doing? I'm defiling chulin. Is it going to affect the next piece, the challah? No, it's not going to affect it, because everyone holds Ein Sheni Oysa Shlishi Bechulin, and that unpronounced hunk of challah dough is viewed as chulin. It's not viewed as challah. So if you say that it's mutter ligroim tuma l'chul shevet stro, go ahead and set it up like that. But once again, here our focus is on, are we doing anything wrong by putting in that middle piece? Well, mor savar, the Rabbanan say, osur ligrom tuma l'chulin sheberetz Yisrael. You're not allowed to make something that is tohor and make it tomei, even if it happens to be just chulin. Rashi elaborates commentary on this sukya, filling in, I'm sure, a lot of questions that you might have, which we have not dealt with. The further analysis of the two sources, one and Roman numeral 1 and 2, one said Pachos Mikbeitza, the other says Kibetza. Why? What's the difference between those two Rabbi Eliezer sources? But for our purposes, we want to keep things streamlined, and we attempted to show how Rabbi Eliezer was of the opinion that Ein Sheni Oyser Shlishi B'chulin, and as the Gemara unfolded, it turns out that it's not just Rebbe Eliezer, but it's the Rabbonin agree with that as well. That was, you saw that in stage 2 of the analysis, and likewise in stage 3, that Ein Sheni Oyser Shlishi B'chulin. The only difference between, we'll say, stages for our purposes, the difference between stage 1 and stages 2 and 3 is that in stage 1 we were saying it's only Rebbe Eliezer that holds Ein Sheni Oyser Shlishi B'chulin, and stage 2 and 3 it's not just Rebbe Eliezer, it's the Rabbanon as well that happened to argue with Rebbe Eliezer, and we had to explain, if they're not arguing over the issue of Ein Sheni Oyser Shlishi B'chulin, what are they arguing about? And we saw those further explanations in stage 2 and stage 3. We continue in the Gemara, citation from the Mishnah. This section of the Mishnah that we're going to quote now dealt with the Levite cities and the resolution of two psukim, one pasuk indicating that there's 1,000 amos around the Levi cities, and another pasuk indicating there's 2,000 amos around the Levite cities. Rabbi Kiva, his method of resolving the two psukim is as follows, that 1,000 amos is for the migrash, is to be left uncultivated and unbuilt, and the 2,000 is a reference to Tchum Shabbos. 2,000 amos is the distance from which the maximum distance a person can walk from the edge of a city outwards on Shabbos. The other Tanaic opinion in the Mishnah said that the pasuk indicating 1,000 amos around the Levite cities is for Migrash, and the pasuk indicating 2,000 amos was that the second 1,000 amos outside the city is for cultivation, for ginos and for sodas and pardesim, for cultivation purposes for the Levium that lived in those cities. The Gemara now says, "B'mai kom lifligi." What's the underlying point of machlokus between Rabbi Akiva on the one hand and Rabbi Eliezer on the other hand? Mor sovar tchum midoraisa. Rabbi Akiva says that the restriction of walking beyond a city boundaries on Shabbos of 2,000 amos is a Torah-based prohibition. Umor sovar, Rabbi Eliezer, who made no mention of Tchum Shabbos in his description of the 2,000 amos, he said that the 2,000 amos was a reference to cultivating that area outside the city. He holds that Tchumin derabbanan, the restriction of going 2,000 amos on Shabbos beyond the city's limits, that restriction is rabbinic. So Rabbi Kiva holds Tchumin d'oraisa, and Rabbi Eliezer Tchumin d'rabbanan. As we go on, we deal with the topic, and you can see on the side of the Gemara we have our Nosei / Mivne heading. A diamond appears, and you'll also see the use of a double underline. These are Shitos B'Ketzad Omru Shiras Hayam. Different opinions in how the Jewish people, along with Moshe Rabbeinu, recited the Shiras Hayam. Shiras Hayam, maybe you're more familiar with it by referring to it as the Oz Yashir. It's part of our daily prayers. The Shachris, every Shachris, as part of the Psukei Dezimra, you say Shiras Hayam. Tonu Rabbanan. Bo Bayom Dorash Rabbi Kiva. On that day that Rabbi Elazar ben Azari was appointed to the Rosh Yeshiva, as is featured in Maseches Brochus, Rabbi Akiva taught, B'shal Sha'olu Yisrael Minayam, Nosnu Einem Lomar Shira. When they ascended from the split sea, they then literally gave their eyes over. In other words, they looked forward to reciting the Shira. The Ketzad Amru Shira, how did they say the Shira? Kegodol Hamakre Es HaHalel. Like a Godol, and another couple lines you're going to see, another approach that talks about a Kotten Hamakre Es HaHalel. The a Godol Hamakre Es HaHalel is in a, let's say, in a public setting. One person recites the Hallel for the congregation. What do the members of the congregation do in that type of setup? So, how is that done? We said Kigodol Hamakris Hallel, Vehein Oinin Achrov Roshe Prokim. In the case of Hallel, for example, one person, the designated individual, the Godol as referred to here, he would recite line by line the Hallel, and at the end of each, we'll say at the end of each verse that he recites, the congregation will say Hallelujah. Hallelujah is the word that constitutes the beginning of the different paragraphs that make up the Hallel. That's what is meant here by the public response, Hein Oinen Achrov, Rosh Prokim, the beginning of each chapter. Now, in the case of what we want to do is we want to transpose that approach that we find by the Hallel now to the Oz Yashir. Moshe Omar, Ashira Lashem, Vehein Omrim, Ashira Lashem. Moshe Omar ki ga'oi ga'o. Here Moshe Rabbeinu is continuing in the Shiras Hayam. Yeah, he said ki ga'o ga'o, which is that which follows the expression of Ashira Lashem. Said Ashira Lashem ki ga'o ga'o. So Moshe would then say ki ga'o ga'o v'hein omrim, and they would say Ashira Lashem, and it would go on phrase by phrase, verse by verse, like that, and each time the Godol is in the case of the Shiras Hayam, each time Moshe Rabbeinu was saying a new phrase of the Shiras Hayam, the public responded by saying Ashira Lashem. That's called responding with Rosh Prokim. I know it might sound a little confusing. We assume Oz Yashir Moshe, that's the beginning. No, that's not the beginning of the actual song. That's telling you that when they crossed the sea, that Moshe said the Shira Sayam. What was the content of the Shira Sayam? Well, that begins with Oshiro Lashem. So that's called the Rosh Prokim, the beginning of the chapter. Another opinion, how was the Shira Sayam recited? Rebbe Lezer, Beno, Shereb Yosef Lili Omer, Kekotan Hamakris HaHalel. If a person himself doesn't, let's say he doesn't know how to recite the Hallel, and all he has around him is a minor, so the minor, the Kotan, can read the Hallel for the adult. What does the adult have to do, though? Vehein oinin achrov kol ma shehu omer. So in the case of the Hallel, the minor would say a pasuk, and the adult listener will repeat word for word what the minor said. But then the minor will go on to the next phrase, and the listener, who's a gadol, will then repeat word for word the new phrase. And phrase by phrase, what the kotan says, the listener would repeat. Now, how does that work out in the case of the Shiras Hayam? Moshe Omar Ashira Lashem, Vehein Omrim Ashira Lashem. Moshe Omar Ki Ga'o Ga'o, Vehein Omrim Ki Ga'o Ga'o. In other words, whatever Moshe said, they would repeat. It's in that fashion that the Shiras Hayam was recited. By the way, all of this is based on the word Lamor, and we had seen that in the Mishnah. that it tells us that the recitation of the Shir HaSem was done in a, we'll call it in a special fashion, where you had the community, where the nation of Israel were responding to that which Moshe Rabbeinu was saying. And how were they responding? So far we've seen two opinions. The first opinion said their response was simply to constantly repeat the expression of Shir HaSem, which is called the Rosh Perek. According to the second approach, the public would say whatever Moshe Rabbeinu was saying. They would repeat phrase for phrase. A third approach would be Nechemya Omer, Kesoifer HaPuris al Shema B'Beis HaKnesses. Sofer is a teacher. Children used to learn in shuls. So the Sofer is the child's teachers. They were located in synagogues. And the Puris al Shema, without getting into, let's say, literal translations and details, the Rashi explains that when the community would get together to recite Kriya Shema, so the Chazan, the one leading the davening, he would say the opening bracha, Baruch Ato Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Ho'olam, Yotzer Or Uvorei Choshech, Oyseh Shalom Uvoyas Hakol, and the Tzibur, after hearing him say the opening bracha, they would then say the opening bracha, and everyone would continue reading together. Namely, the chazan along with the congregation. So that, as far as Rabbi Nechemiah is concerned, Moshe Rabbeinu, let's say, functioned on his own only with regard to the opening. As the source says, Shehu poseach tchila v'hein oinin achrov. Moshe Rabbeinu, in this case, would open up Oshiro Lashem Ki Go'o Go'o, or maybe just say Oshiro Lashem, and then the Tzibur would respond Oshiro Lashem, and then from that point onwards they would say it all together. Now what's, of course, you might be asking, how in the world would the Tzibur know what to say if they're not hearing it first from Moshe Rabbeinu, but rather saying it simultaneously with Moshe Rabbeinu? So the explanation for that is that there was a divine spirit, a type of prophecy that came over the entire Jewish nation, instructing them as to what to say without needing to have heard it first from Moshe Rabbeinu. Hence, they were able to say it all together. B'mai komiflugi. What's the underlying point of controversy between these three different approaches? Rabbi Kiva Savar Lamor, as we saw in the Pasuk, Vayomru Lamor. So the word Lamor, what is that a reference to? Amilsa Kamaisa. And according to Rabbi Kiva, the Jewish people were instructed to say the opening phrase each time. Each time Moshe Rabbeinu moved on to a new phrase, they would say Milsa Kamaisa, the first phrase. Rabbi Lozer ben Osher Rabbi Yosef Glili Sovar Lemor Akol Milsa Umilsa, that they were instructed to say phrase by phrase whatever Moshe Rabbeinu said they would have to say. Rabbi Nechemiah Sovar Vayomru, remember the pasuk says Vayomru Lemor, so he focuses on the word Vayomru as well as Lemor, and what is his conclusion? Vayomru means the Amur Kulhu Bahadi Hadodi. Vayomru, they are all to say it together. Lamor, what does that teach me? The Pasach Moshe Beresha. That he would open up by himself, the Tzibur listening to that opening phrase. They would say the opening phrase, and then from that point onwards, they would all say it together, as is derived from the word Vayomru. Tonu Rabbonan. Before we continue, we should note on the side we have a topic heading, which reads Afilu Hatinoikos Omru Hashira. We're going to see in this source that even very young, and in fact, we'll see an opinion, even the unborn said Shira. Said this Shira Hayam. Dorash Rabbi Yosef Glili. Bishol She'olu Yisrael Min Hayam. Nosnu Inayim Lomar Shira. As the Jewish people ascended from the split sea, they desired to say song. The Ketzad Omru Shira, how did they recite this special song of praise? Oilel Mutol Al Birke Imo, Vitinok Yoinek Mishte Imo. The Oilel is a toddler. He's older than a tinok. A tinok is an infant that's nursing. Olel, a little bit older. So the olel lying on its mother's knees. The tinok nursing from its mother's breasts. Kevon shiro es hashchina. When they noted, they saw, they perceived the divine presence. Olel higbiat savoro. The tinok shama dod mipiv. The toddler picked up its neck, raised its head. The infant stopped suckling, the omru, and they said, "Ze keili v'anveu." This is a. They had clarity. They recognized this is the divine presence. This is God, and I will exalt Him. Of course, when we see things like this, one has to understand it's not as if there's some form that they saw, but it's a type of spiritual recognition of an intense divine presence. And they noted that. And if you look back on Daf Yud Aleph Omid Beis, this there's reference made over there to how the Mitzrayim oppressed the newborns. They were absorbed into the ground miraculously as the Mitzrayim were trying to trample them, and they experienced the divine presence at that time, so you can rest assured that they were able to recognize the divine presence later on. Truth is, though, that those were infants in Mitzrayim. Here we have infants at the crossing of the sea sometime later. Nevertheless, this the association that we're making is this recognition on the part of the very young of the Shechina. And how do you know, how does Rabbi Yosef really know this? Shenemar, it says in the Pasuk, Mipi oilim v'yoinkim yisadet ha'oiz, from the mouths of toddlers and suckling ones, yisadet ha'oiz, you established strength. Hoya Rabbi Meir Omer, minayin shafilu ubrim shemei iman omrushir, from where do you know that even the as yet unborn, the ubrim are fetuses in the wombs of their mothers, they said shira. Shenemar, the pasuk says, we continue at the top of the lamed aleph, b'makelois b'chu elokim Hashem mimakor Yisrael. So you have makelos is a gathering of people. As they gathered on the sea, they praised God from where? Mimakor Yisrael. Makor is the womb, from the, literally it has to do with a source, it's the source from which a human being emerges. From there, even as yet unborn, they were praising the Almighty. Bo Bayom, and here we continue with another quote from the Mishnah, and the focus here is with regard to Eov. Was his service of God out of love or out of fear? The Mishnah had quoted the pasuk, "Hein yiktaleni loy ayachel." The gist of that pasuk is they can be killing me, and nevertheless, and then lo, and then here the problem is how do we deal with that word ayachel? Ayachel is to pray toward, to hope for, to be connected with. So the Gemara, first we quote the Mishnah, Bo Bayom Dorash Rabbi Yeshua ben Horkanes Shelo Ovad Eov V'chule. We had the two opinions in the Mishnah. How did Eov serve God? Did he serve him out of fear or out of love? The Gemara is going to ask, why is there any doubt about the service of Eov, if it's a question of how to understand the pasuk Hein yiktaleni lo ayachel, why not just look in the Torah and see? Look in the scriptures, that is, and see whether the word lo is spelled lamed vav, or is it spelled lamed aleph. If it's spelled lo ayachel lamed vav, that means that even if I'm being killed, I still look forward to God. That is a sign of extreme devotion and love. If it's spelled lamed aleph, then he's saying, as they're killing me, I have no need to look forward to God anymore. A sign of distancing himself. Certainly not an expression of love. So the Gemara asks, let's read it now inside. Falechsi hai lo, why not just look into the scriptures and see? E belamed aleph ksiv lohu. If it's spelled with an aleph, then it's lo, meaning it's negation. I won't look forward to God anymore. E belamed vav ksiv, and if it's spelled with a vav, then lo who? Then it's unto. Then it is him. I am looking forward to him, even in my most dire of straits. The Gemara responds that just by looking at the way the word is written is not going to solve our dilemma or our doubt. The chol heicha dechsiv belamed aleph lohu, where the word is spelled lamed aleph, does that necessarily mean negation? Elo meyato, there is a pasuk that says bechol tzarasam lo tzar, that in all of their troubles, lo lamed aleph tzar. Tzar means to feel the pain. Dichtiv belamed aleph, it's spelled with lamed aleph. Hachinami delohu, are you going to say that in fact that when the Jewish people are suffering, so the Almighty doesn't feel any sense of kiviyochol, doesn't feel any sense of strife or of pain? V'chiteima hachinami, and if you say yeah, that's what it means, that when the Jews are suffering, God is doesn't feel any pain kiviyochol. But you can't say that. That's not the pshat in the pasuk. That's not the explanation. The haksiv, the continuation of the pasuk says, "Umalach panav hoshiyam," that there is that the Almighty sends an angel to save them. Ela mashma hachi, umashma hachi. The word, even if it's spelled lamed aleph, can have a connotation of negation, and it can be an expression of wonderment, of like lo tsar in this case. Is he not concerned? Does he not feel their pain? Or like with regard to Eov, Hein Yiktaleni, they could be killing me, and I'm not going to look forward to God. Of course I am. So that it can go this way or that way, and hence the. There was room for argument. We saw in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yeshua ben Hurkanus was convinced that Eov was serving God out of Ahava, out of love, and it's true that Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai was presented later in the Mishnah as saying that no, Eov was serving God only out of fear. Tanya, Rabbi Meir Omer, Nemar Yirei Elokim b'Eov, and Nemar Yirei Elokim b'Avram. In with regard to both of these personalities, you find the expression Yirei Elokim. Ma Yirei Elokim homur b'Avram me'avo, just like the expression Yirei Elokim, which Yira generally is translated as fearing, but in the case of Avram, we know that he didn't serve God out of fear. So just because we know by Avram, his service of God was out of love. So af yirei elokim omer b'Eov me'avo. So too, though the term yirei elokim appears by Eov, one should recognize that Eov's service to God was out of love. Ve'avram gufei menolon, and Avram itself, how do you know that he was serving God out of love? Dichtiv zera Avraham ohavi. The pasuk describes the seeds of Avraham, the one that loved me. My ikar bein oise me'ava la oise mira. What difference is there between one who serves out of love versus one who serves out of fear? Ika ha desanya. There is the following difference that's taught in this source. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer, Godol oise me'ava yoise min oise mira. Greater is one who fulfills the will of Hashem out of a sense of love and devotion, more so than one who does so out of a sense of fear. Shezeh tolui lelef dor, vezeh tolui le'alpayim dor. The merits of one who serves out of fear will serve to benefit 1,000 generations. One who serves God out of love, his merits will serve to benefit even 2,000 generations. Hochaksiv la lofim lo havai uleshomrei mitzvosai. See, the word la lofim is the word 1,000 in plural form, so it's at least 2,000. Vahasamksiv, and the pasuk in Dvarim says uleshomrei mitzvosav le'elef dor. Shomrei mitzvosav is taken to mean yira. Yira, Rashi points this out, so that in the Aleph Pasuk, we have Alofim Lo'avai L'Shomrei Mitzvosai. In Pasuk Beis, you have Shomrei Mitzvosav L'Elef Dor. Only 1,000 generations will benefit from this individual's merit. The Gemara asks, but Hosam Nami Ksiv Lo'avov U'L'Shomrei Mitzvosav L'Elef Dor. So you see, the Elef Dor is found in the pasuk, but simply by reading one word before that which was quoted in the source, you see the presence of lo ohavav. The Gemara says that doesn't present a problem. Hai l'desomich lei, v'hai l'desomich lei. If you look at the two psukim that we quoted, the word ohavai in where the aleph is, just a couple lines up. It's true in that pasuk you also saw shomrei, which is an expression of yira, but which word is next to la lafim? The word ohavai. In the Bay's pasuk, which word is closest to elefdor? It's true in that pasuk it said lo ahavov ule shomrei mitzvosav elefdor, but in that pasuk the Elef Dor, the mere 1,000 generations, that is closest to Somech to Shomrei, the ones that fear. Hence, our conclusion that when it comes to serving out of Ava, the merit lasts for 2,000 generations. Serving out of fear, the merit lasts for 1,000 generations. Hano Tre Tamidi, the Havu Yasvi Kame, the Rava. There were two students seated in the presence of Rava. Chado Amarle, one said, Akrun b'chamoi, I was shown in my dream. Akriun, literally it was read to me in my dream. Ma rav tuvcho asher tzofantu li'reyecha. That was the pasuk that he heard in his dream. V'chado Amarle, Akrun b'chamoi, and the other one said, it was recited to me in my dream. V'yismichu kol choyse boch li'oylam yiranenu. V'yaltzubach ohavei shemecha. So, Rava, upon hearing these two reports, Omar lehu, Travaychu Rabbanan Tzadiki Gmuratun. He says, both of you are completely righteous individuals. Mor me'avo, u'mor me'ira. The difference between you is that one serves out of love, and the other serves out of a sense of fear. As you can see, with the Siyata Dishmaya, so we've reached the end of the fifth perek of Sota. And also, before we conclude today's shir, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.